From the Illinois Extension Crop Management Conference in DeKalb, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vex. She's with Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, Missouri. We'll hear from Emerson Nafziger today. He's with U of I Extension and an agronomist. Just retired, in fact. Congratulations to Emerson, but he's still working hard. And we'll also hear from Sean Conley with Wisconsin Extension, all about soybeans in both cases, corn too with Emerson. So stay with us as we make our way through this production-oriented edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Wednesday afternoon, I'm coming to you from DeKalb at the Red Roof Inn, where the University of Illinois Extension Crop Management Conference is taking place. Thanks for being with us for the day. And it's time now to turn our attention to the commodity markets and what's happening in Chicago and what the trade's been like. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson now joins us. Hey, thanks for being with us, Jackie.
Thank you, Todd.
Well, we've been starting the last several weeks, and I think this is a good thing to do again today because of the movement in the marketplace, especially for soybeans, with some of the key resistance and support areas. What do you have?
Well, and I want to make sure that everybody understands I switched from March to May now because, you know, we're coming to the end of February, and so everything changes. So these are going to be May numbers. So May corn resistance is at 381, which is the 200-day moving average. Next resistance would be 393, and that's the 100-week moving average. Support we've got at 365, 100-day moving average, and major support is going to be down there at 353 and three quarters. So when we look at May beans, this is interesting because we challenge. I think, you know, there's a lot of psychological resistance in May beans at 1050, and the resistance actually is at 1053, which was the high that came in back in July of 17 on the 10th. Beyond that, if we get above that number, we're into new contract high neighborhoods, and then who knows where we might go. Support basically down at 1037 and 1016. So you can see there's a lot of there's a lot of room for movement in there, and you know, this market action since the USDA supply and demand report is pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, who would have thought that you could get a report that actually didn't give you very positive numbers, it gave you rather negative numbers, and instead you've got a market that's going wild. So, you know, I call it non-reality, Trump's reality every time. You know, every time you look at fundamentals, you know, fundamentally we look at the USDA report, we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. But the reality is that, you know, they're betting on Argentina being extremely dry. They're betting on the fact that Brazil is, you know, extremely wet in some areas. And it pushes people who are short, in short positions out, and therefore drives the market higher. It brings in some extra, you know, extra buyers. And so we get kind of this crazy thing going on. But we will get back to reality at some point in time.
What do you think about the Ag Outlook Forum and what will happen there this week?
Well, you know, it starts tomorrow. I always have enjoyed going to it. I wish I could have been there this year. I'm hoping to be there again next year. But, you know, they're going to give us some acreage estimates for all the coming crops. And basically, here are the guesses. For corn, they're saying 90.12 million acres. That 90.167 is what we had in 17. So not a whole lot of difference. Yield 173.3 versus 176.6 for this year for a real crop. And an average crop of 14,361,000. That would be lower than this year's, which was at 14,604. Now, on bean acres, 90.69, that would be about 500,000 more acres than last year. Average yield 48.8 compared to 49.1 this past year. And then you take the that brings us in with a crop that's about 18 million bushels lower than last year. So, you know, not a significant change in general. Look at wheat acres. They expect wheat acres to go up by about 350 million. When you look at wheat yields, 46.6 versus 46.3 this year, and wheat crop itself at 1.83 compared to 1.74 this past year, so a larger wheat crop. The big numbers that, a person always looks at, of course, are what are the carryout numbers going to be? They're guessing that corn is going to be at 2.1 billion compared to 2.352, which is what we're looking at right now. Beans, 539 versus 530. And wheat, 929 versus 1.09 billion. And so, you know, they're betting that there's going to be some really good corn usage. It doesn't look to me like they're betting that the bean usage is going to pick up like we'd like to see, because, I mean, those are extremely large numbers. But we have to remember, you know, this is the beginning of the year and so many things can happen in between.
The Ag Forum, of course, is tomorrow and Friday in Washington, D.C. And if you'd like to watch some of that, you should be able to on a YouTube channel. I've already embedded that into the willag.org website, so you can just scroll there and scroll down and you'll find it at willag.org. Now, let's turn our attention to some of the things that have been really happening in the marketplace. We can talk about Argentina, but I want to start with the U.S. dollar as it's related to the soybeans that are on hand in South America.
Right. Well, you've got the dollar right now trading over the 10-day moving average. It looks like it might want to challenge that 90.56 double top that we had back on the 8th and 9th of February, and that is really helping the South American farmer. But, of course, he's still not selling, you know, which is amazing to me. But I think the point of this entire thing is that he will sell at some point in time. The farmer, unfortunately, down in South America who is harvesting, in some cases, is harvesting rather high moisture beans, and therefore that makes it tougher for them, too. You know, they have to really, they're getting discounted severely. And so they're between a rock and a hard place. They're not like we are. But at this point in time on old crop for them, they should be selling old crop like crazy. And I'm sure that that's the furthest thing from their mind while they're out there trying to harvest new crop.
And then if you can talk a little bit about what's been happening in Brazil, what do you see?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a tough field down in South America at the moment. This is what's been helping us. Brazil as a whole is 17% harvested. It's only 2% behind the five-year average. I mean, you the way people talk, you think that they were so far behind, but they are behind what they were last year when they were extremely ahead. Mato Grosso is the furthest along. They've got 44.9%. Their five-year average is 43.3, so, you know, they're actually ahead. But the beans have been very high moisture. You know, they've got no drying capabilities down there, and so they've just been getting hammered over the head with discounts. In a municipality of Mato Grosso called Claudia, in the last 15 days, they've had 36 inches of rain. Can you imagine? And yet they only expect 20% of their beans not to be harvested. It isn't unusual in South America for them to be harvesting beans in water. You know, they're running the combines in the water, harvesting the beans. And so Paraná right now is the slowest area. They're only 5% harvested. Their five-year average is 23%. And so the scary part is the second half of February looks to be wet. And so, you know, that certainly is making them extremely concerned and very nervous. Full season corn down there is 15% harvested versus 16%, so they're doing fairly good. The big one is safrinha. See, full season is only about 30% of the whole crop, Todd, and when you look at the safrinha, it's 26% planted versus 31% on a five-year average. But if they are planting after that third week in February, it's ideal to have it in by the third week in February, okay? They can plant until about the 10th to the 15th of March, but they can't plant much beyond that because otherwise it's filling into the next dry season. And so, you know, of course, down there they're probably saying, is there going to be a dry season right now? But safrinha corn is 70% of their whole crop. So I think that, you know, it's something that they certainly are very concerned about and what's going to happen. You know, we talked about the Northern Arc, those six ports that are up in the Amazon. I thought this was very interesting. They increased their corn shipping in 2017 by 71.8% and beans by 31.5%. Now, they already were shipping a great deal. The entire country, the ports in the entire country, increased their exports by 8.3% on corn and beans. You wouldn't think they'd be able to do that, but they have. So there, I bring this up because I want our listeners to understand that, you know, they're making a lot of infrastructure improvements down there, and they're also expanding the volume at all of those ports in the Northern Arc. If VR-163, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, how muddy it was on that 112 miles to get up to the Arc, gets finished, which it should, they're going to have the grain railroad. And, you know, they never use their waterways the way we have, and they are now changing over a bunch of those waterways so that they can barge grain to the north too. It's going to make them very competitive and gives them the ability to get their grain on the market sooner. I believe we're really benefiting at the moment because they're having such a tough time, not only with the weather, but also being able to get everything to the ports where it belongs.
And finally, do you have a feeling for what the crop condition really is like in Argentina?
Well, I'll tell you what, the overall crop condition, if you look at it, is 56% poor, very poor on beans, and with a topsoil moisture of 75% short, very short. Now, the majority of that is in, you know, the worst numbers come out of the south. The north is much better than that, but the south is really, really pulling down. And so, you know, it is an ugly situation, and it doesn't look to be getting a whole lot better. Santa Fe, which is in northern Buenos Aires, said this is the lowest amount of rainfall that they've had during the growing season in the last 70 years. Can you imagine? 70 years.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it is. And certainly not something, you know, when you think of South America, and when Jeff and I were there, it's very tropical, you know, so you just don't really think of it being like that. Of course, the further south you get, and when you get into Argentina, it's not nearly as tropical as what Brazil is. But it's very, very challenging for them down there this year. The one thing that we do have to remember, you know, and I've heard a lot of people who, you know, are saying, well, you know, everything's gone to pieces and the whole business. The expectations still are that they may lose 15% to 20% of their yield. That's really not as bad as you might think it is when you start to hear these kinds of numbers. And so we'll have to wait and see. You know, every week will be another week closer to when they're done and when they're filling and doing all the things that have to be done to complete the bean crop. But it's certainly pumping us up, I can tell you that much.
Indeed it is. Hey, we'll talk with you again next week, okay?
Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Fakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Sean Conley. He is a state specialist for University of Wisconsin-Madison, taking a look at crops. Thanks for being with us. You made a presentation during the Crop Management Conference in Illinois, DeKalb, about what you're calling a yield gap. Tell me what that is and what your hopes are.
Thanks. Yes, the yield gap is basically the yield difference between what that theoretical genetic yield potential is and what the grower actually receives or harvests off his own land. And roughly, I would argue that for northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, the genetic yield potential on soybean is right around 120 bushels per acre. Last year, the state of Illinois averaged 57 bushels per acre. So that roughly tells us there's a 63 bushel yield difference between what the farmers averaged on their farms and what that genetic yield potential is, and that's the yield gap. And what we have is this project sponsored by the North Central Soybean Research Board with funding that would have came through the Illinois Soybean Association as well as the Wisconsin Soybean Association, and to really characterize this across the North Central region. And I don't know how many farmers know this, but 30% of all the world's soybeans comes from those 12 states in the North Central U.S. And frankly, for that matter, 80 to 83% of all U.S. soybeans come from this area. So it's a huge opportunity for us to collect on-farm data from farmers to characterize what they're doing on their farm, utilize this AI or artificial intelligence methodology to analyze the data, and then deliver back management practices that growers can utilize on their own farm to minimize that yield gap, which is, again, that roughly 60 to 63 bushels on an annual basis.
how do producers in the North Central region get involved? And I should say that would run from Illinois all the way to the Canadian border and from the Dakotas all the way over to Ohio. So it's a big space, including Kansas and some other folks.
There's a couple different ways. You can talk to your local extension specialist, or you can talk to Emerson Knopfsinger at the University of Illinois. He's the one managing this program for the state of Illinois. Or you can come to my webpage, which is www.coolbean.info. Download the fillable PDF we have online, and then just put in your GPS locations and all, fill in the data for all the management practices. And then we'll basically, since we know where you live, we can attribute that data back to Illinois and have you in the database.
So this is actually fairly easy to and simple, if I remember correctly from Emerson telling me about this, to fill out, because most farmers will know the answers to the questions off the top of their head.
Right. You know, most farmers would roughly know 90 to 95% of the questions right off the top of their head. They might have to dig some fertilizer rates in a specific field, or look up what variety they planted in a specific field. But it's really easy. And roughly, you know, in Illinois, they could probably drink it over a slow cup of coffee. In Wisconsin, you can drink it over a long cup of cold beer. So that'd be the two differences between the states.
Will they get anything back from you once you've gathered all the information in?
So what we do is then with all the data goes into this database, and you wouldn't specifically get a direct farm report to your individual farm, but we'd characterize you based on these TEDs, and these are technology extrapolation domains. And that basically means is we group farmers that have similar yield environments, similar aridity indexes, basically how prone you are to droughty soils and other characteristics. And then what we do is, once we have enough farmers in a TED, and that's roughly 90 farm fields within a TED, we can then sort out all of the management practices among all the farmers and pick those that give farmers the biggest return on investment. And those are published on my website, which is www.coolbean.info. Go to the soybean research drop-down box, click on that, and you just scroll down and look at it, and it would be yield gap in the North Central U.S. report. So you can look at where you fall on the map. Say you're in TED 2R, you go to the figures, it says TED 2R, and that, again, will tell you what are the management practices you can do on your farm to increase yield and ROI.
Big data and the soybean.
It's wonderful. And again, I always want to make sure I thank the checkoff boards, both the North Central Soybean Research Board and all the state checkoffs that contribute to the NCSRP. For without the checkoff dollars, this type of research would not be possible.
And thank you to that, of course, is Sean Conley. He is with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's a soybeans and small grains specialist for Extension. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Emerson Knopfsinger from U of I. He's an Extension agronomist there. Emerson, farmers in the state of Illinois across the whole of the Corn Belt have had 3, 4, 5 really good years in yields. And I'm wondering if you've had some thoughts about this and what things might be different or that might be changing as they're, just thinking about where these yields came from.
Right. Our human tendency is to think that our management is what made the difference. That's why yields were high. Honestly, anybody looking at this last year, which had a pretty rough start to it, and dry periods and wet periods and everything in between during the season, you know, if by the end of June, I think a lot of people would have sold their crop for 80 bushel less than they actually harvested. And it just showed us, some pretty amazing things. I think that's largely a consequence of the hybrids and varieties being much improved through this sort of relentless breeding pressure to produce higher yields. And that means, in many cases, just more stress-tolerant varieties and hybrids. And I think we were beneficiaries of that this last year. We still have to do things right, of course. You need to get the right amount of fertilizer on, nitrogen particularly. You need to plant early enough if you can, although this last year we replanted a huge chunk of corn. And I've been saying, because of the way the summer went with the highest temperatures of July there, right in the middle of July, the replant almost certainly increased yields compared to what they would have been if we had had that earlier planted crop. We saw some of that in southwestern Illinois, where they were trying to pollinate in 100-degree temperatures there in the middle of July. And those that had replanted, of course, theirs pollinated 2 weeks later and generally yielded more. So that was one of the things that we have to point to and say, well, you know, we weren't quite as much in control of this whole thing as we'd like to think we were. So I've been just emphasizing the idea that we need to use our research, get to the right place with regard to plant populations and nitrogen rates, and be careful about using things that are, you know, kind of, well, maybe this sometimes does some good, things like micronutrients and that sort of thing. We certainly don't rule out, we know micronutrients, as an example, are needed by the crop. The real question is, you know, do we routinely get a yield increase when we use them? And so far in our work, that answer has been no. So the tendency when we get high yields is also to believe that if it's inputs that make these yields high, then did we use enough? And we can often point to nitrogen in that regard on corn and say, well, it turns out 2017 looked a fair amount like 2016. In other words, we had high yields with, in most cases, moderate amounts of nitrogen. And the nitrogen rate calculator that accumulates prior research to tell us what to put on this year was pretty accurate on average in 2017. And we like when that happens, but we understand that for any given field, it's probably not going to be the exact amount you need. The problem we have is with things like nitrogen or even plant population, we don't have the knowledge at the beginning of the season to say, well, we know exactly for this field or this part of the field that we need 180 pounds of nitrogen. So our tendency is to think, well, let's make sure this one isn't limiting. And we spend money, not always wisely, with the idea that at the end of the season, we don't want to have anything on the list of things that we wish we had done because we would have gotten higher yields. I think that a reasonable way to look at this is that with today's genetics, high yields are clearly possible without doing anything extraordinary in terms of inputs. In other words, people harvested some 300 bushel corn yields and some 100 bushel soybean yields this year without going out and dumping fungicides and insecticides and micronutrients and a lot of extra nitrogen and that kind of thing. It's always a matter of a little bit of luck in that regard, because the weather turned out to be way more favorable than it looked like it was going to be in the middle of the season. But we might recall that, you know, the yield estimate for Illinois on the August 1 estimate was 188, and we ended up with 201. And I recall distinctly that the 188 seemed to almost everybody to be just way higher than we're going to get. So those kinds of surprises are nice to have. The negative surprise, like this looked like 230 bushel corn and we only harvested 180, has actually become fairly rare today, and I think that's because of the high genetics that we're dealing with.
Anything that you would suggest producers positively do for this growing season, whether it's for corn or soybeans?
We've looked at seeding rate for both corn and soybeans, and unlike some of the things you hear out there about soybeans, you know, 100,000 seeds or 110,000 seeds really is not enough. And our research showed that pretty clearly. So over the last 3 years, we've been doing trials with that. And we think that planting 140 to 150,000 seeds is just where people should be with that. And we also suggest people don't plant more with the idea that if they don't get quite as good emergence, then they'll still have enough stand to keep. We can't really be afford to be keeping stands of, you know, even if they're uniform and there's 50 or 60,000 seeds out there, we probably need to, or plants out there, we need to think about replanting. Corn, we did see some trials this last year where we needed 40,000 or maybe even slightly more than that to to get to the highest yield. That's been fairly rare, actually. And if you look at an average over the work we've done in recent years, establishing 35 or 36,000 in our most productive fields is generally about where we're going to get maximum yields, or I should say optimum yields. We still need to pay for that seed. One thing that's gone is this danger of having too many plants such that the crop just deteriorates, you know, falls over, falls down, dries up, this kind of thing. The stress tolerance bred into hybrids today means that we can, you know, get to 40,000 or even 45,000 plants. They're not going to fall over or fall apart. The real danger of getting to those very high populations is that that last 5 or 6 or 8,000 seeds didn't pay for themselves by increasing yield. And so we could be paying more for seed than we really should be paying. Other than that, we've looked at things like row spacing and you know, the usual agronomic things. I think all told that people that, you know, manage their crop in a very sort of middle of the road type of way probably are maximizing their returns at this point. Those that just feel that, you know, their secret is to use more than anybody else uses, say it be it nitrogen or seeds or anything, we don't have very good evidence that that's a paying proposition to do that.
Hey, thanks so much.
Sure.
That, of course, is Emerson Nafziger. He's an extension agronomist. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, traveling again today at the Crop Management Conference that belongs to Extension. In DeKalb, we're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I hope you're having safe travels and enjoying life.
You know what? It wasn't too bad. I thought it might be a little risky coming up here this morning, given the rain and the cold temperatures. But my way was clear all the way up. Hopefully it'll be that way on the way back home. And then tomorrow, just as a reminder for folks, I'll be in Springfield at the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Auction. So we'll see that at the State Fairgrounds. We'll tell you more about that tomorrow. Let's talk about Argentina again. Rainfall over the last weekend, hit and miss, I think. What do you see for the next several days?
Well, for the next several days, there really is not going to be any big change. I think for the most part, we will be left basically dry in the heart of the key production areas. As we get into the weekend and early part of next week, there will be an opportunity for a little disturbance to come in from Chile, and as it comes over the Andes Mountains, it'll probably end up producing some shower and thunderstorm activity across the heart of Argentina. Now, the precipitation that's advertised is still not the kind of rain that you'd want to have if you're trying to break out of a drought, but it will at least produce maybe a quarter to three-quarters of an inch of moisture and perhaps some locally greater amounts. This will occur mostly during the middle part of next week, maybe Tuesday into Thursday. And if anything has potential for becoming a more significant event, it will be that event. So we'll watch it rather closely. At the moment, it's struggling for moisture, but a little change in the orientation of this event before it comes over the mountains could make a big difference to Argentina. So we'll watch that. Temperatures will be fairly warm over the next few days, and then after the storm passes, it'll cool off for a brief period of time, and then we'll go through this whole process all over again with the second weekend of the two-week outlook being dry and starting to warm back up again.
What's your assessment of the crop there and in Brazil, and are they just a swap?
I think Argentina certainly has got to the point now where the losses are more and more significant, and they're getting to the point where maybe Brazil won't be able to counter some of the loss. But Brazil is certainly having a very good production year, and we still just don't know how good it is. The northeast corner of Brazil has been in a multi-year drought, but that area has actually had several nice bouts of rain here recently, and that has improved late-season crops quite a bit. And I think because of that, there's still potential that Brazil might help counterbalance Argentina's losses just a little bit. But it's going to be interesting to see what the bottom line is. Some areas in Brazil not quite as well off as last year, but certainly a big, big crop coming up.
And finally, wrap up here in the United States. As we began our discussion, we were talking about the rainfall. Where's it been, and how long will it last?
Boy, you know, the weather pattern certainly changed over the last week, and a much wetter weather scenario is playing out across a big part of the Midwest at this point. The Northern Delta, parts of Missouri, Illinois, on into Indiana, and parts of Ohio, it's turning quite a bit wetter. And over this next 5 to 6 days, we're probably going to end up with a couple more waves of rain moving through some of this region, and we'll see anywhere from 2.5 upwards to 6 inches of additional moisture. The ground's already getting saturated, so the potential for flooding is on the rise. Just to the northwest of that, though, there'll be a chance for rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow, and I think sometime this weekend we'll end up with a very impressive snow event that will take place from parts of Nebraska into Wisconsin and Minnesota, maybe anywhere from 4 to 10 inches, something up over a foot might occur. So we're in that time of the year when the temperatures are contrasting greatly and there's a lot of energy in the jet stream. So it's going to get interesting for a little while.
Interesting is good, I suppose. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a good day.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.